Hello
and welcome to Dream Game Studios, a podcast hosted by me and Nomad, in which every week we invite a guest to join us in our Dream Game Studio to tell us about the game that they've always wanted to play, because we've got all of the developers we need, but we just don't have any ideas. And this week our guest, Nomad, is...
Albino, the big YouTuber man himself, also a streamer on Twitch as well. This guy has over a million subscribers on YouTube. He's a big deal, and he's one of my favorite YouTubers. I love his Noita series, and... he just gets into, like, the craziest things in this episode. Like, the amount of games, weird games. I guarantee you, you haven't heard of every single game in this podcast, because he brings up so many, and it's a hell of a ride.
Yeah, he really introduced me to a lot of games that I'd not even heard of, and I really enjoyed recording this episode. And I hope you enjoy listening to it as much as we did, getting involved in it. So let's kick off straight away with Albino. Welcome, Albino, to Dream Game Studios. How are you doing today?
Thanks. I'm doing good.
You found our lobby easily. It's a big building here at Dream Game Studios.
It's fantastic. You know, there's a good atmosphere. Can't complain, really.
I mean, some people do complain about, like, the cries of anguish from our workers, and they think the whips are a bit much, but, I mean, it's a game studio.
Well, they're clearly
not
YouTubers. You know, I whip my editors every day, and I hear their screams of anguish as well, and they, you know, I'm kind of desensitized at this point, so, yeah.
You'll fit in well here. You'll fit in
I'm
well.
Kind of used to
your
it.
Environment. Yeah.
It's just like background noise. You probably have screams of anguish playing in the background when you're...
It's like white noise, you know? Mm-hmm. It's just there. When you think about it, it's there, but most of the time, it's just kind of not, so... Yeah.
Okay. Have screams of anguish informed your gaming history? Are you a gamer who likes hard, difficult games that make you cry, or are you? Did you start on a different side?
Yeah, I would say so. Well, it's more that, you know, if the game isn't challenging at all, then what is it? You know, I'm kind of like, I feel a bit old, but like old school with like a game needs to have like a game in it, right? It's a very clear game, and it's not like this open-ended, kind of unrestrained, doesn't know what it wants to be kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And yet, you know, I like to be challenged, so, you know, that's a big deal to me, I guess.
Does that come from childhood? Because I know a lot of people, when they started gaming, played hard games. Games in the old days were pretty hard. I remember even the games I played as a five-year-old, six-year-old, they were quite challenging, and I basically didn't complete any of them. Were you similar?
Yes, one of the earliest games I played was Rayman 1 on the PS1. I don't know if you've touched that.
Ooh, yeah, I did actually.
It's terrible. I replayed it as an adult, and it was actually even worse than I imagined. Like it's rough, man. But there's you have like, the difference between like is it difficult and like how punishing is it? Because if you game over in that game, it's just like you're done. It's over. Back you got to do beginning. All over again or something, or you have, need like a password or something. It's you know. How those games were, but yeah, they were much harder before, I would say.
I remember trying to play Mario on the Game Boy on long car journeys, and I think I only ever got to the fourth world because I was pretty bad at it. Yeah. So you can't save. So we got to the destination. That's it. My run's over.
Yeah. Mario, the Mario World, or?
I think the first one on the Game Boy. Quite an old game now.
Yeah, probably Super Mario World. It's not like the black and white one with the weird final boss, which is like some kind of squid in a spaceship.
I never saw that final boss.
Okay. So. Never got that
no idea.
Okay.
I had a weird one as well. I think I had one of the Super Mario Advance, I want to say. But I think it was supposed to save, but mine didn't. It was probably a cheap one from like the market, which my dad bought. But like, it basically resulted in me like basically trying to complete it. And I remember several times like on a car journey, getting really far, getting home, and then being like running to the plug socket to try and plug it in before it died and wiped all my progress. Just trying to be sitting there. My parents like go to bed. And I'm just like, I can't leave this right here. It's further I've ever gotten. But hard times.
Tough day. Yeah, it was rough, man.
Going into those early games you played as a kid, did that inform your taste as an adult, or did you suddenly have a shift where you started playing different stuff?
I don't know. I feel like when I was a kid, I just liked everything because I haven't had that developed taste yet. Like I think pretty early on, I got like some idea what I wanted. Like I remember my dad bought me this like racing game for PS2, like PlayStation 2. It was shit. And I thought it was shit. And I was like, yeah, I'm enjoying this game, Dad. It's great. But I didn't. Nah, but one time though, he like got this like he randomly he just because he's a old man, like boomer. He doesn't know anything about games. I didn't like playing games with him because I would always beat him. And he didn't like playing with me because he didn't stand a chance. And then, shot in the dark, he buys me the Metroid Prime one for GameCube. And that was when, like, that was the big hit. But so I had like a feeling, I guess, for what I enjoyed as a kid, but not quite exactly where it was, I guess.
Yeah, but did that change when you got older? What sort of stuff do you like now? When did you start playing the games that you now play as an adult?
I don't know. It's hard to say. I never really think about this. So I don't know how to. I gotta think. Well, I played like Heroes of New Earth and Dota 2 for like 5,000 hours. Heroes of New Earth for like 1,000 hours. So there was a period of time where I only played like MOBAs, like the usual like Grand Theft Auto and stuff like that. I think it's like literally as an adult, I really developed like what I really enjoy, which is like roguelikes are generally very punishing. Have a strict set of rules that you have to follow, and you can, you know, use to your advantage and stuff like that. That's something I really enjoy. But also puzzle games, and not like your usual type. If you've seen like The Witness, stuff like that, where it's like an actual like puzzle, like type Sudoku, you gotta do the line over here. More like a scavenger hunt type mental puzzles, or like you guys played La Mulana?
No, I haven't. I don't even know what you're talking about. Scavenger hunts, is it like item finding games?
I can try to describe it. Like, La Mulana is a game that came out in 2011 or something. The HD remaster of the game, anyways. It was like an MSX game back in the day. It's basically a game where you are... It's like a Metroidvania archaeology type game, 2D, where all you do the entire game is you whip out your OneNote or Word or whatever. You read tablets around in the ruins that explain the history of the place and the big, it's like you're doing a master's in history, basically, the entire game. And these have like clues to how you solve certain puzzles. So there's one where it says like, stand under the eye of Veget, do nothing. And then in another tablet it says, Veget is Horus, the eye of Horus, the eagle, like in Egyptian shit. So you find the Eye of Horus, but you don't know that's the Eye of, that's Veget until you read the other one. And it's like that, those kind of like puzzles where like it's just like hint, riddles. It's like riddles. The entire game is just riddles. That's the word I was looking for.
So it's right. Basically like homework, in effect. Does it sound like much?
Kind of like homework, but yeah, like really, really difficult riddles that most people do not enjoy, but once you get into it, you become completely obsessed.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
That type of stuff. A roguelike I played recently called Noita did that kind of, sort of, well, actually pretty well.
Oh, yeah, that one. That's the one where every pixel is simulated.
Yeah, that's like the main selling point of the game. And it's like this roguelike where everything is, it really is really cool. How do like fires, how the fire spreads, it makes smoke, water makes steam, all that stuff. Snow melts, makes water, the water, like, it's insane how they program all of that.
Yeah.
It's truly a craft of, a labor of love, you could say. Mm-hmm.
I get the sense that you're a gamer who loves a Wikipedia, like a gaming Wikipedia, where you go off and read stuff and then apply it.
Oh, that's the fun part. You don't. That's okay. The fun part. Because you just find it at yourself. When a game is designed so well with the rinse and the riddles and the hints that you can only use the source you get at the game to solve it, that's the best feeling. When you do it yourself.
That's cool. Sort of thing you're looking for in the game you're pitching to us here?
The game needs to have that. Absolutely.
So tell us a little bit about it. Where's it set? What sort of game are you trying to make here?
As like the base game, I think it would need to be like something strict. I think when I mean strict, it's like, have you played The Binding of Isaac?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's very clear what that game is. It's like you have a character, it's walled in. You have resources here. You have health here. These are the rules. Whereas some games are like an aimless game, like Cyberpunk. It had its creep or like scope creep out the ass, which is like they don't really know. They have like all of these ideas, but they couldn't concentrate them into a concisive experience. So they're just trying to do a million things and does nothing well. So like a concentrated game with clear, like this is what it is. Probably kind of vague, but... I'm guessing like a 2D game, maybe.
Mm-hmm. It's nice when you kind of pick up a game and you start playing it and it's like, I immediately know what this is. I know what it's doing. There's no point in Blinding of Isaac when you're like, what am I supposed to do? Because you're in the first room, someone's shooting at you. You know you're some sort of weird child. There's everything that's going on there is pretty much consistent with what's going on.
More or less,
and
yeah.
I think that's a cool thing as well because it allows you to get more in depth than any other game. Because like, for example, Cyberpunk, like, it's a good example because it's something which is actually, it's got a lot of depth to it, but at the same time, they're just going like a little bit deep into all the very broad stroke ideas they have, you know? Yeah. Like, and nothing's ever like groundbreaking because of that. But meanwhile, you know, Noita, complete opposite. It's so specific in what it is and what you have to do that they just keep on going. They just keep on like, you know, keep like, you're at the end of the game. Okay, now there's another end of the game and there's another world and there's more things to do.
And you, from the beginning, it's always like your goal is clear. You're at the top. Yeah. You make it to the bottom. That's it. Yeah. And these sort of, well, like,
but what if I don't do that?
Yeah, no, the Noita is it's kind of weird in that sense because it doesn't really explain to you how you do that or how the wands work or how anything works. You're just tossed into the world and here you go. But yeah, what was I going to say? I'm thinking it would probably be like some kind of 2D game with some clear rules. Like, for example, you know, another good example of a concise, clear game is Celeste, if you play that. Very clear platformer. Yep. You know, you get a good tutorial. You just jump over some things and you do a bit, expands upon that, and you get new things to do and whatnot. Very clear. Something like that. And then probably some sort of Metroidvania. But like, if I'm supposed to explain my dream game, I'm honestly just explaining La Mulana. Because that's kind of what it is. Yeah.
Yeah. So what setting are we looking for here? So do you want it set, anything set in any particular area? There are game settings that you've always wanted to explore but haven't had the chance?
I don't think so. I don't think it's that important because I don't really... Take, for example, I'm going to just throw examples at you guys right now to kind of explain what I'm meaning here. But like a game, Underrail, if you probably haven't heard of that either. It's a very niche RPG. It's set in like the distant future under the ground, and you don't get to know much about it. It's just like, well, it's sometime in the future, humanity is underground, and the point is that they build upon that and made the world building so, like, interesting, so that you just want to find out more and more, and the more you learn, the more like crazy it becomes. It's just like, it's insane. So, and I didn't expect that, and I didn't want that, but I got it and I loved it. So for me, the setting and stuff like that isn't too important because it's the same attitude towards me making YouTube videos. So people don't know what they want.
Yeah,
I don't know what I want, and my viewers don't know what they want. And you know, you just gotta do what feels right. So, and I have never developed a game before. So what do I know, right?
So you're looking for like something set in a world that's interesting and deep. So imagine.
Well, maybe it's not though, because like if the ethos here is like you do what feels right, and the people don't know what they want, let's do what the people have never had. You know, let's do like, I don't know, 1800s Latvia. That wasn't actually a country back in the 1800s, but it is in this world. There we go.
Yeah, yeah, you know, something new. As long as it's good. I don't know. I'm not too hung up about settings. It's not like I really like medieval stuff, or I like space things, or post-apocalyptic stuff. It's not about that. It's just if it's an intriguing world, and the people who make it are passionate about it, and they want to do something good with it, then you know it's not too important what it is. If they can tell a good story and make a good world.
Are there any world settings that have really resonated with you, where even if it's not that important to you that a game is set in a particular space, that this one's been like, this is something that really triggered something in me? Because I don't know if settings that important to me. Like you say, I'm generally quite interested in just an interesting world that builds upon, but there are certain settings that have like really resonated with me and hit something. Is there anything similar like that for you?
Well, it was Underrail. That's one. That was really cool. It's a spiritual successor to Fallout 1 and 2.
Okay.
The old types. Yeah, like isometric.
Do you have any examples for what you liked from your, you know, what setting resonated with you?
I would say something that really resonated with me was like Return of the Obra Dinn, because I never thought I really liked pirates, but the way, or fantasy stuff, but the way that they merged those two things together of kind of fantasy, kind of pirate stuff, that was something that I really kind of resonated with in a way that I hadn't expected to. Because I guess because it was just kind of well told. And that's kind of a sort of world of that eldritch stuff that I kind of really ended up
Eldritch stuff too is very cool. Underrated has some of that too, but I feel like if I go too deep into that, I ruin the experience for someone else. Because it's
you don't want too much detail on that one.
Yeah, really.
I think for me, I think Bastion is probably one of the coolest worlds. It's just like, it's just different. I don't even know if the world of Bastion is that good. It's kind of pretty straightforward. It's more just the way the story is told. So again, the setting kind of takes a background there to the awesome storytelling of that one. But yeah, definitely one which stuck with me for a while.
Let's dig down into the gameplay of your game. So you mentioned kind of roguelike kind of simplicity. Are there any particular types of gameplay that you would love to see highlighted or used here?
Really difficult optional platforming. It's one thing I'd like.
So it has to be optional, but really difficult.
Yeah, I mean, overall, I would like the game to be like so much challenging, but, you know, increasingly so. But not afraid to go hard, you know? And then have an optional part that's like just like fucking brutal. That I would love that.
Do you like that? I mean, personally, I hate optional stuff that's really, really difficult because I get obsessed with doing it.
Yeah, but that's great. That's great.
Yeah.
I know it is kind of, but I get so obsessed with doing it over and over again. And there's always this part in the back of my mind going, you don't have to do this. You don't have to ruin your life spending 16 hours doing this. And I'm like, but I don't have that
voice at all. Right. It's like, you have to do this. You got. Come on, you can do this. No, just practice, you know, some more consistency and you got it, you know? But I love that stuff. It's just,
That kind of ruined Guild Wars 2 for me, though, because, I mean, I started playing the game, and then I started finding the platforming stuff, and I was just hooked, man. Like, I just wanted to do all that. And the platforming in that game is surprisingly good. Even the controls are pretty bad, but that kind of just makes it harder in a way, which is kind of good. And, like, I don't know, some guy on the development team just went absolutely ham on the platforming in Guild Wars 2. So I actually, like, stopped playing the game and just focused entirely on the platform and did all the platforming. It's like, all right, I'm bored of this now. I don't need to play this game anymore. I've done all the platforming. I was obsessed.
Yeah, I mean, but like clunky, bad controls can be a good thing sometimes. Like, hate to bring up the cliche here, but Dark Souls has kind of shit controls. Like, your clunky, slow character, but that adds to the game. So, it can be, if put right, be a nice thing, I guess. Optional difficult platforming, or just like optional difficult combat, optional really difficult riddles. They're very, very good. Very good stuff.
Is there a chance you'd want it to all be optional? Because that's something we could do. We could have every bit of content be essentially optional, and you can kind of start and go straight to the end if you want, but just optional stuff along the way.
I guess. But I would think maybe like some sort of Metroidvania, but I also do like, you know, type of role-playing games, like RPG types, like with stats and all that. Oh, probably like a Metroidvania. I like Metroidvanias. They're cool. And like Metroidvanias that have like this design where you can sequence break if you just know how. Stuff like that is really fun. It has like replayability to it, you know.
So let's go into the main part of this gameplay then. So you're Metroidvania and you're running around shooting people, fighting little bosses, or is it a case of exploring a world and is that kind of the thrust of it, or is the thrust difficulty of gameplay?
Well, it kind of needs a bit of both, right? You need to have the world to explore. Needs to have, but obviously, like, compact. You want to have, you definitely want to have, don't have too much. Because if you're going to, at a later point, add, riddles to the game, secrets and stuff like that, then you need to put them very, very, you know, particularly, if that makes sense, so that you can describe them better on later.
So, like, do you prefer replayability in the terms of, like, reaching the end, completing the game, getting the credits roll, and then, you know, you start a new save file and play it again? Or do you prefer like the roguelike or even roguelite genre where, you know, you kind of finish but then you don't never really finish, you keep going and you either keep on building upon a save file where it gets like bigger and bigger, or, you know, just a straight up blank reset but where you got to use what you learn to keep pushing forward and, you know, and kind of gaining the knowledge? Which direction would you prefer to go in?
No, I think in terms of roguelikes, I definitely feel like the blank slate restart is the best, for sure. A pet peeve of mine is meta progression. I think that's the word for it. Where like you have a save file that like you, well, for Binding of Isaac, you only unlock things so that like now more things are available in your runs. That's fine.
Yeah, like that.
No issue with that. But when you go start going like Hades and Cult of the Lamb with it, we're like, okay, now you did this thing, and now you have plus one damage, plus one health, and like all these things. Then it's just I don't like that. Yeah, and like Rogue Legacy, if you play that, where like you can on top of that, you have to decide, do I want damage or health? Which one should I get? Damage is more expensive now, but if I put health, it's, you know, I have a min-maxing mind, so I can't do it. I just can't.
Well, I mean, we spoke to someone else who talked on that topic, Star Action Stacks, and he was like, yeah, like I hate the roguelike because it doesn't, you don't feel like you're getting better at the game. You're just unlocking, you know, improving your character in the game, and that's where you're able to get further, which takes a point out of it entirely.
Exactly.
The game's getting easier rather than you're getting better.
They're just making sure that you get to see all the content in the game. Like they don't want to make it too hard, but like that's definitely a pet peeve that I just like. When I tried Cult of the Lamb recently on stream and I tried to play it, I was like, well, going into it, I said, you know, this game is focused on base building. It's probably going to have meta progression. I'm probably not going to be a big fan of this game, but I'm going to just know that before I just ram the fuck out of the game for being what it is. It's just not for me, you know? But that's it. Some people love it. Like, you so Hades did super well. That game was like, didn't it get like Game of the Year for something?
It's well done.
Super, like the art, the writing, the voice acting, the game itself is very addicting and fun, but to me it didn't have enough depth. In terms of like what you do between the combats, it's not much going on.
Do you like that sense of a story? Do you want this game to have a story, or would you prefer something that the story is playing the game? In effect, there's no kind of a narrative you're stepping out into.
It's a story you can opt into, sort of.
More optional stuff in this game.
So yeah, at this point, like the game is like a straight corridor, and then there's like loads of rooms on the side.
Let's say you can talk to NPCs if you want to, but it's not like in, for example, in Hades, where like, okay, you can't go through this door until you talk to this NPC, you know?
Yeah.
That I don't like that. Mm-hmm. The story isn't that important in that game anyways. Like,
do you do the optional stories when you do them? Because I never really enjoy the optional stories, but I get obsessed with doing them. I'm playing a game called the Nephilim Saga at the moment, which is pretty good, but the story in it is very boring, and I'm not really enjoying it.
If it's good, yeah.
I'm still reading it all, and being like, I have to do all these conversations. I have to become friends with all these people.
No, in that case, no. But for example, if you play the Fallout New Vegas, that game had really good side content. Like the side quests there, the dilemmas they put up are like always like you have to think about it, and you can't just like rush through all of it and then make decisions. You have to like take things into account, and they're usually very convincing, and the voice acting is really good. The writing in that game is very, very good. So for example, in the game like Fallout New Vegas, there's definitely reading all of it and enjoying all of it, every quest, basically.
But my follow-on question is, for then this story, if you want a good story for this game, are there any particular stories that you think should be told in a game, any media you'd love to adapt into a game or anything along those lines?
All I can think about is like the cool optional stuff I've had earlier. Like that's it. Like I'm too spoiled with optional, good like super good content, so yeah.
I'm a big fan of like needlessly deep, but like kind of the hidden lore, which is like needlessly deep. And again, you know, we brought up a ton, but Noita is full of that, where it's actually got like some really interesting world building stuff behind it.
Yeah,
but like it is so hard to find it. Dota, you literally have to like read into the item's descriptions to find the lore in that.
Yeah.
I mean, like I think Risk of Rain is another good one as well, where like in general, you gotta read the logs. Gives you nothing. But the logs themselves like are actually full of stuff, and then you can go down the rabbit hole and play Risk of Rain 1 and 2 and like suddenly discover this whole world behind it, which actually really fleshed out and really cool. I think that's like, it's good because it doesn't shove it down your throat, and you know, the game lets the gameplay draw you in rather than the story. But then if you do find yourself enjoying the story and like noticing cool things, like, oh, why does this interact with this in this way? And then all of a sudden, like, the things start to make sense. And it's like, we have provided this background information for you, but, like, it very much is background for only, like, the true fans. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you feel like, oh, I'm a true fan. You know, I belong to this game secret underground, you know, dive bar club. Yeah.
That's a, like, just keep, like, the introductory, like, whatever cutscene, whatever, like, pretty open.
Neat, yeah.
And, like, cut to the chase and then let the gameplay just do its job, right? Like,
do you
for example,
need an introduction personally? Are you happy just to be dropped in a world and have to work it out, or do you want that context given to you immediately?
I'm fine with either, honestly. I like those type of games. Like, for example, let's take Unreal again, for example. It's like there's a station, you're just some random nobody, and you should just get do some jobs here and there, get yourself sorted, and then eventually, we had a cave in, there was an earthquake, so you got to get some drill parts to clear that. It kind of makes sense. And then you get like drawn into these like conflicts between factions and you know, some conflicts that happens in different areas of the game. And another game, Environmental Station Alpha, is like, well, there's an environmental station in space, and you are a drone sent out to figure out why they are not responding. That's it. Go in. Done. Why is it not responding? Why is it offline? Like, that's it. That's the entire story.
Yeah.
And then the gameplay does its job, and you figure out more and more, and you know, some logs from survivors you can read, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. I feel like with this game, we need a little bit more of a hook to kind of entice audiences in. Are there any films or books that you've always wanted to see adapted, or just that you enjoy that we can adapt this game to have this kind of maybe world in crate?
I kind of don't read books.
Uh huh.
I do watch movies though, but. Nothing that haven't already kind of been adapted, though. Like, for example, one thing that I really... A book that I really liked, that I actually did read, was the one that Stalker was based on.
Mm-hmm. Roadside Picnic.
Yeah. Roadside Picnic. Yeah, that was just, like, really... It's kind of out there, though. Like, the people who wrote that book, it's written in, like, a really not easily digestible way, let's just say. And the way that they describe things, like there was this one scene in the book where they're in like the zone, and there's like good descriptions of things, like the shadows going in places they aren't supposed to compared to the light and stuff like that, and two pieces of metal floating as if they were attached, but there's nothing in between them. And things like that, I think, is really cool. But that's already been done in Stalker, kind of.
Yeah.
Sort of.
It has been so.
Yeah, but with some creative freedom, I would say. I don't think the Stalker universe is as good as the book, but yeah.
I think if you've seen the film of Stalker, which if you don't massively love films, I wouldn't necessarily recommend. That's almost a better game than in terms of what you're describing than the game of Stalker, because that's basically a platformer. They kind of go through these little challenges one by one, jumping over panels and stuff. Would you almost like to see a platformer made of the Stalker universe of that kind of?
Yeah, that's where I was gonna go.
Could be very cool. Yeah. Not the Stalker universe, but the Roadside Picnic universe, because that's more intriguing. Because in that, there was just like some aliens came, some aliens left. Here's the whatever's left of what they left behind, and we have no idea what it is or how it affects us. And then you just got to figure it out. Like that's really cool. I like that.
So, I mean, I've never like heard of Roadside Picnic. So can you just give me like the TLDR of like the setting and the kind of premise?
Yeah, sure. There's this. At some point, there were aliens in an area. Don't know anything about them. They were there. Now they left. And there's a bunch of artifacts left behind and some anomalies in the area. And it's really dangerous and, you know, it doesn't make sense through our, like, laws of physics and whatnot. It's really weird in a very intriguing way. And this is about, like, people who scavenge these zones for things to sell and exploring it and doing and researching it, basically putting themselves at risk. That's more or less it.
Yeah,
but it's essentially all mystery. I mean, I've seen the film. I've read the book ages ago, but it's all kind of like, I don't know exactly why they're going to the middle entirely. There's an idea about enlightenment in there and all of that sort of stuff, which I think is a really interesting for a game, because the Stalker games are quite resolute on what you're actually doing. It's you're going there scavenging artifacts and you're trying to get the mysterious power in the middle, but there's no kind of this openness that you seem to enjoy, which I think is really ripe for that kind of roguelike type game where it's all about discovering ideas and building your own ideas.
A roguelike into the zone. That would actually
there
be perfect
with a with a kind of, so we're staying on like the kind of Castlevania Metroidvania.
But Metroidvania and roguelike doesn't necessarily go too well together. But I'm just saying, like a Metroidvania into the zone, that sounds very cool.
Yeah, because
there's a lot of exploration to have there, and a lot of platforming as well. You've got to jump over toxic waste, jump over
all types of anomalies, Stalkers come out. Stalkers goes in. He gets lost in the zone. That makes that's kind of like how it goes. You pick it. You next life, you're a new Stalker because you died, and then
So what kind of things are we upgrading through, or, you know, we finding amongst our runs to amplify our character, you know, our stalker? How are we improving it?
Well, are we going with the Metroidvania now, or are we going with the roguelike? It really depends.
Yeah, I guess, but can we not combine the two? Is that too...
I don't because Metroidvanias tend to be long, like really, really long, and you I guess, I don't think anyone's done it, as far as I know.
I mean, I guess...
Because the Metroidvanias are more like you explore the world, you find a dead end, you see something that is like, you need probably another power to get through. It's all about like the horizontal progression where you get like new utilities to use to open doors and to double jump and to the usual.
Yeah, kind of moving into Hollow Knight territory, I guess, with combining
the two. Yeah, yeah, more like that. And, you know, if you played Hollow Knight and Steel Soul, then you know that... Unless you have a certain skill set, it's not that enjoyable.
So are you looking to enemies to fight here? Do you want people, kind of other scavengers, monsters in the realm, or are you looking for that more kind of discovery and platforming now?
Oh no, definitely. Well, in between the upgrades and everything, there's got to be something for you to beat at, right? Mm-hmm. You got to have something to fill the rooms. There's got to be a game there somewhere. So yeah, there's got to be enemies and the enemy varieties. I mean, there's natural inhabitants of the area, obviously. I mean, other stalkers, they don't have to be friendly, right? Mm-hmm. They aren't in the games, I don't know, I remember in the books, but in the games, they definitely aren't. They fuck you over left and right. So
some of them are a little friendly.
Definitely. But
what's great about the setting in this game as well is we can have so many unique different enemies, because you're coming across people with mutations, people with different powers, and people with different magical abilities and kind of arcane stuff. And I think that's really ripe ground for every enemy almost being completely unique. I think that's a really... Interesting thing what you're looking for.
At least in the Stalker games, you had a lot of cool like things. You have the chimeras, you have the colossal ones that like stomp the floor and whatnot. You got the ones that the Psy enemies that like, you know, when you get hit by them, there's like this beeping tinnitus sound, and then you just get zoom in on their face and it's like massive damage to you, like Psy damage. they have like so many different creatures in there, and then also like those Psy creatures also mind control other stalkers at points in the games as well. So that's definitely another thing to... And then you can just like take it from there and just get creative and make like bosses out of certain like archetypes of enemies and just take, you know, go wild with it. Mm-hmm. Yep. So definitely a lot of potential there.
And
maybe some plant growths or whatever, stuff like that.
I'm mentioning one of the forbidden games here, which we try not to talk about too much, but Skyrim did have good side quests. I mean, if we didn't forbid it, it would just come up every single time, but I guess there's kind of a reason for that. But like, and I'm doing it now, so it definitely is. I still remember, like, you know, one of my first playthroughs, and like about an hour into the game, I start talking to someone, he's like, oh yeah, go and investigate the vampire cave. And then it leads you down this whole path of like, you know, 4 or 5 hours of gameplay. Actually, I don't think it's that long, and eventually you come out as a vampire in the end. You're just like, oh, okay. And then your whole rest of the run, you're like, I'm a vampire now. Never asked for this, but this is how it is. And that I feel like that was one of the, like, the cool moments for me. And I think like seeing that in like this kind of game with theory crafting for here would be very cool, where, you know, you never really get what you expect, and then you just have to like work with what you get for the rest of the run. You know, so maybe you go and investigate this artifact, which some guy's like, oh yeah, I got like flying powers from that. And then it doesn't give you that at all. It gives you, I don't know, like...
Yeah, because like the thing about the artifacts is that like no one really knows what they do for the most part.
Yeah.
So you pick something up, something happens. It could be terrible, it could be good, it could be whatever. Not necessarily. I mean, I don't think it would be like a good gameplay experience. Let's say you pick up an item, you don't know what it is, and it's just like, it just fucks you over. And now you have it forever. Like, maybe
you have cancer now.
Yeah. There's got to be like a plus and a minus at least, like, you know, something to cancel it out. But
would you like it so it's a complete mystery? You have to work out what it does rather than it being like an inventory. This increases your damage. That's double shot, where it's kind of like an experiment.
Oh, it's got to be more interesting than that.
That could be where the riddles come in, though, because like, you know, you can go through it blind and just like do whatever you want, or you can actually try and figure out the riddles, which will give you a hint on what things do, right?
And bonus points if the entire game's language is deciphered.
Yeah. Right, have you want it written in a made-up language? That
oh yeah, have you guys seen Tunic?
Oh yeah.
Tunic does that. That game is it came out recently. It was like spot on for
Animal
me.
One,
yeah. Yeah, where you don't have to decipher the language. You really don't. I assume that you did because I've like this. I mean, I deciphered language in Noita in Environmentalization Alpha. Like, I'm kind of used to it at this point. But that language has so many details on the. Under characters, I couldn't be arsed. But that was very cool because it feels like now you're in like a completely alien world. Like you don't belong here, and that's a good thing to reinforce, I think. Even though it scares away some players, like we're making a dream game here. We're not making a game that sells. We're making a game from
not everyone's dream game. It's your dream game.
It's my dream game. Yeah, yeah. I want to get lost.
I was going to ask if you want to have voice actors, but are you wanting people to voice act your dream language, your made up language?
No. Absolutely not. I don't like voice acting.
You don't at all. Music? Will you play your own music?
Yeah, music for sure. I mean, and especially in a game like that, there's gotta be music, 100%, mm-hmm. And it's gotta, but not like necessarily overused. Sometimes silence is good as well, but you know, having things to hit the atmosphere that you're going for kind of is really important. I guess the one thing that I hate kind of about La Milana, for example, is a game that you're supposed to sit down, think, and figure out puzzles. So a soundtrack like kind of ambient, very quiet, like in the background, mysterious, perfect. But this game goes for straight up fucking bangers. Like it's something you could play at the club and like fucking go wild to. And you're sitting there just like fucking pumped up and you're trying to solve a puzzle. It's such a crash of moods, you know?
So you're looking for calm ambient game in this, or do you
Absolutely.
Want pumped up?
Yeah, no, not pumped up.
Are there any particular, because we can get anyone here at Dream Game Studios, are there any particular ambient artists you like who you'd like to soundtrack this game?
I like the guy who did this Underrail soundtrack very much.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
We can get him.
And
we'll take him. I mean, employ him.
Yeah, we'll get him, definitely. That game is not very available, no. We could probably like actually get him, though, but yeah.
We probably actually could.
Yeah. And then I really like the disaster piece, the guy who did Hyper Life Drifter.
That's a good soundtrack.
Have you heard about that game?
I've played it briefly. It's one of those games that kind of half sits in my Steam library and I've opened up a couple of times.
Yeah.
But not properly played. There's too many games.
Right, yeah, no, that's same. I kind of had a problem too, but Hyper Life Drifter had a very, very like kind of experimental, good soundtrack. Mm-hmm. Definitely. And also like ambient at times. See, he could do the pumped up stuff. He can also do like the ambient, you know, relaxing soundtracks. And a lot of the soundtracks have like different variants. So you have like the overworld theme, you have the very calm like underground theme, and the important thing is that they all like fit the environment they're in. So it's as long as the soundtrack just like fits spot on with what's actually being the game is going for, then that's the most important thing.
Let's close up then by graphical style. Do you like pixely games, bad graphics games, or are you looking because we can get the best graphics engine possible here?
It's that the thing is that as long as they have style, like I'm gonna bring up Fortnite. Fortnite has a good style.
Wow,
it knows exactly what it's going for. That's like the one thing when I went from PUBG and I went to Fortnite, I was like, this game, it doesn't go for like the watered out super realistic garbage. It goes for like its own. It's cartoony. It may look childish, but it's very well stylized, and the colors are great. They fit the game and all that. I really appreciate that about Fortnite. Well stylized. It can be pixel. It can be hand drawn. It can be whatever. Well, not like too lo-fi. Mm-hmm.
If we're saying this in the zone, like big bright Fortnite colors might not be entirely appropriate, though.
No, not exactly. No, we're going with like super detailed, like super high res pixel art. Okay, because this is a dream game, and I got whatever I want. I really like 60 frames per second pixel art.
So like not Absolutely. Like each pixel is like RTX rendered, where it's like
but like just high res sprites in high frame rate. Beautiful to look at.
What's the game called? Because, I mean, you said two lines which have stood out to me. One of them was Into the Zone, which I kind of thought would make a nice title, but also You Don't Belong Here, which you mentioned before, is like kind of a stylized for the game. So those or something else entirely.
You Don't Belong Here it sounds kind of cheesy, but if anything, it could be like the title and then You Don't Belong Here. Like that could be something, but
yeah
as for the title,
chop one of the words off that old classic, like You Don't Belong, or
I would probably just write something in Norwegian, like some fun in Norwegian word.
True. That most you can just understand. Translate it into Norwegian, we'll probably be like, ooh,
yeah, or like cool. Or like Norse. I'll just have a Norse word. for a game. No, actually, that would fit
why
it as well.
It's, presumably, it's set in Ukraine, Russia sort of area.
No, the aliens actually visited Iceland. Okay, that's why.
All right.
So it has Norse in it.
That's okay, that's an unexplored region, actually. You know, when it comes to both gaming and like, I'm going to go off on a tangent, but that region is absolutely beautiful, right? And like, for some reason, culture just kind of ignore. Everyone wants to go to like the hubs of people, I guess. You know, like Japan and Canada for photography and like,
Iceland's just sick.
Yeah, it's super ignored, and I've never understood why. So yeah, absolutely. Let's get more stuff made in Iceland, starting with this game.
If the sun was there, they have volcanoes, they got hot springs, they got like all sorts of wildlife. Mm. And what did the sun do to that? Like you can do a lot there, I feel like.
Yeah,
it's also really expensive in real life. So the fantasy being able to go there in a game is quite nice.
It's like this one country, one big island with one city, and everything else is just like the countryside. It's really odd, but
Perfect place for aliens.
Yeah. You never know. They might be there.
What was the name you were going for? Did you say it or did you just...
No, I would have to just like, you know, hit my head on the keyboard and something comes out.
All right.
Those games are pretty cool.
Perfect.
I'm a fan of that. We'll call it some... wonderful. Any figures on the game cover? Nomad always designs the game covers for our games.
That's my job.
Oh, no, I would just... Either I would be heavily inspired by something. Because I've had this issue with like making merchandise, making thumbnails, making this and that. When it comes to graphical design, I just ask an artist to do it and give them like a meme as a reference for a thumbnail or something. I can make a thumbnail, but I can't make a game cover.
I would just
take something here, take something there, take something there, take something there, and just mesh together into something cool. Like, but I don't have anything in mind specifically. I mean, that's just how I work creatively. I just take things and put them together.
It's a broad brief, but we'll allow it.
I'll take Iceland. I'll take the Metroidvania playstyle, which we've also kind of skirted away from, and Stalker, and somehow we'll put it all into a pot and fish something out of it at the end. I'm sure it'll work fine.
Yeah.
I think it sounds pretty good. I think we've got there. I think this game actually sounds pretty exciting to me. I think it sounds good, really interesting.
Yeah, you can't wait to play it.
Sure. Any final thoughts before we close up?
I'm good.
Me or?
Yeah, either of you.
No, I'm all good.
Play Tunic.
Wonderful.
William, and don't Google anything.
Don't Google anything. Never. Turn off Google. Ban yourself from the website. We'll leave it there then. Thanks so much for coming on, Albino. It's an absolute pleasure to talk to you.
Likewise. It's been fun.
To making this game. Thank you. Wowie, we got there eventually, and what a game when we did. I think that actually ended up sounding really, really exciting, and a big ride on all of those obscure little titles he brought up, Nomad.
Yeah, what an adventure. I feel like I felt like an idiot, actually. The amount of games he mentioned versus the amount of games I actually knew of, which he talked about, is just like nothing. But his gaming knowledge girth is undeniable.
I feel like I was pretty much constantly Googling throughout that episode, but a really good one. Lots for me to check out in the next couple of weeks. And thanks you to the listeners for listening to that. I hope you enjoyed that episode as well as our first one with So Action Slacks. If you've not listened to that yet, go back and check it out in our feed. If you enjoy that episode, please share it around with your friends. This is obviously a new project for us, so we really appreciate whatever help we can get to spread the good stuff around, and leave a review as well on whatever podcast platform you use that does. I know it's a cliche, but it does help out a fair amount as well.
Follow the channel, you idiots. See you next time. Goodbye.
Thank you. We'll see you next week with a great episode with Glenn Moore.